Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 340 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Welcome to episode 428. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Linda Z. Okay, what I never do, I mean, we always have titles for our episode discussions because we only use the episode. Like, there's no point in coming up with something cutesy because if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Use what Stars does. So we do. But we have the leisure to do whatever we want to name our other episodes. And sometimes they're kind of boring, but like, it is what it is. Sometimes they're funny. Sometimes they're titillating. Who knows? So this time, I'm giving you the title. I mean, it may change, but I thought of the title. I have both titles. I never went through this on purpose to think of a title. But as it was going, I was like, oh my gosh, we're there. I was like, okay. The title that I came up with at this moment is It Kicks Off. We shall see if it stays, but that is my plan for the now.
All right. And now on to our read-along. Y'all, so many chapters, so many pages, but we're so close. Like there are definitive moments that are like reaching the crescendo to the cliffhanger of this book. So I'm starting to be more motivated by reading it because there's exciting and weird stuff happening.
Finally!
I know. More battles. It took me a while. It took me a while. Surgeries. Oh, and no more eventful boat things except the one.
Well, yeah. We'll get there. Thing. Stop it. That's an episode later.
Okay, fine. We are continuing our... An Echo in the Bone read-along. Watch it. And we will start with... We are beginning part 7, entitled Reap the Whirlwind. And y'all, this is the last part. We're going to start with chapter 85, entitled Son of a Witch.
We all know who Son of a Witch is. I will say this. Even though I know in the context of Outlander who that is, who it means, whom it refers to, when I first saw it when I was going through the chapters to clump things together, that is actually the title of the sequel to the book Wicked. So there's a written book called Wicked, right, before the musical was made. And there's a sequel by the same author, I forget his name, but it's called Son of a Witch. Okay, of course, we're not talking about that story here. We're in the 20th century with the Mackenzies. So everyone likes Buck, it seems. Mandy likes him, Jem likes him, everybody likes him. And Roger wonders if they had a dog, would the dog like him too?
Probably. I had no idea what you said. I thought you said bucket seams, like seams in a bucket. And I was like, everyone likes bucket seams. I don't remember a bucket being mentioned at all. And then I broke it apart in my head and figured it out. But that hurt my head for a minute.
So how had Buck ultimately known to come to Lallybroch? He'd seen Roger and he'd come through, managed to get his way to Inverness, right? Make his way to Inverness. In Inverness, he'd seen Roger several times. And of course, after a little bit, he recognized him as the dude from the back when whom had been hanged, blah, 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 blah. And he starts to ask around about him. And then he made his way to Lallybroch. And he thought that Roger and Bree, and I guess all of them, must have been an old one. But especially Roger, he'd survived the hanging. And now he also was there in a different time. And he's a little bit afraid of Roger, like a healthy fear, I think.
He should be.
Yes. And Buck desperately, desperately wants to go back to his own time. But he'd need to talk to someone who'd done it before to find out how. Because he got here, like Claire the first time, on accident, Carol Ann. He'd had a job at Inverness for a while, but he'd left it to come stake out Lallybroch. to find Roger, to find out more. And ultimately, his goal is to get the freak back home to his time. And Jem, unfortunately, had run into him by the Brock one day. And so as to scare Jem away so he wouldn't bug him and maybe hopefully keep his mouth shut until he was ready to confront Roger, he said that he was the Nucklevy. So this was the night, this meaning not the Nucklevy night, this night in the chapter. This was the night that was referred to the last time we were with Mackenzie's and a few episodes ago, where Jem had made plans to go spend the night with his friend, Bobby Higgins. Wrong century. His friend Bobby, he was going to spend the night at his house, and then the following day he was going to go fishing with Rob Cameron. So Jem's gone. He's at his friend's house, and Mandy's home, but she's in bed, I believe. Anyway, so she's there with Roger, and she has stuff to discuss. She and Roger has stuff to discuss with Buck. She wondered. Sorry, I'm always on catwatch. She wondered if they should contact Fiona. Now, remember Fiona? She was the granddaughter of Mrs. Graham, who had been the house, and there's a cat, who had been the housekeeper for Roger's adoptive father, the Reverend. And she, like her grandmother, she is the caller, just as her grandmother was the caller for a group of women who'd visited the Standing Stones on fire feasts like Beltane, who would call down or call up the sun. Fiona was her inherited replacement, I guess. And Fiona had also helped Roger when he needed to go through the stones after Bree. Roger and Bree had discussed letting Buck know about his true parentage. Like, would that benefit him? And Bree thinks about Willie, William, and how she had wanted him to know about his dad being her dad. But then also, maybe not. Again, she's like, well, would it help him? You have to keep the person whose life you're about to change irrevocably, they have to come first. And you have to think, would they benefit from this? Or is this something selfish I want because I want to have someone to chat with?
Right.
Roger wakes up later and he's wandering through the house, checking locks on doors and windows. He feels anxious, but he can't nail it down. He doesn't know exactly why he does. So he goes into the office thinking maybe he'll find something to read. And he notices that the snake, Sonny, wasn't in the normal place, in the place it normally was. So someone had moved it. He's like, maybe Annie did? You know, their housekeeper and child caretaker thingy person. Mm-hmm. But then he remembers, like, she'll come into a room and, like, take off her muddy or rainy boots and like leave them in the middle of the floor, like not put them away, not anything, and then when she's time to go home she'll put them on and go home. But next time when she comes in with them, she puts them in the same place. He's like, no, she never moves anything. Like, she won't even clean up after herself. She does not move anything, so it wasn't her.
So you're saying she's a terrible housekeeper, but we're keeping her anyway.
I mean, once you got someone in the know, kind of halfway, not she's not in the know, but you know, you don't want to have to do more people like keep not an enemy, but keep someone you've already kind of broken in, if you will. That sounds wrong, but you don't want to have to do that more than once if you can't avoid it. So she hadn't moved anything, and he knew that Bree would not have. And then it hit him. Quote, the contents of the box had been disturbed. Mm-hmm. He goes and looks at him. The little books were on top of the letters at one end of the box, not underneath. He took out the letters, cursing himself for never having counted them. How would he know if one was missing? Unquote. And he goes through the letters and decides that whoever had opened the box hadn't opened the letters. He did see, however, that one letter was missing. It was the first one, the We Are Alive letter, the one with the postscript about the gold. And right then, Mandy screams. And this is where I got the title, because I wrote to myself to share with y'all. This is where it kicks off, y'all. And that's where I got the title, because it kicks off. This is like, bah! Again, 20th century, not 18th. Although you could, whatever, you know, it's been, to me, a war kicks off. That's a little bit bigger deal than, you know, someone breaking into someone's home and going through stuff. But as far as the 20th century shenanigans go, it kicks off right here. For real, for real. Mandy screams and they run to her, and she's yelling, Jammy, he's gone. He's gone. He's gone. And they try to soothe her, but nothing is working.
Because in this book, they decided the kids needed to be extra creepy.
Yeah, right? He's gone. They try to soothe her. Absolutely nothing will work. And she insists, like, she is not calming down. He's gone, meaning not here. And then she touches her head, quote, not here with me. Oh, okay. You guys get what I mean? This is all kicking off here. Not only is like the excitement and the mystery and the blah, 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 truly kicking off here. This is the first time we get in Mandy's own words anything about her power or sensitivities as it relates to something like the stones or gem or anything. And I'd actually go further and say this is the first time, because Claire was late 20s when she fell through the stones on accident, right? And went the first time. She had no idea about anything. So up till then, she had, why would she think of anything superstitious or anything like magical or blah, blah, right? She's definitely science-minded. She's not a person who believes in a lot of woo-woo. She is spiritual to some extent. She is not, I mean, I guess she might call herself a lapsed Catholic, but she believes in a higher power. And of course, after losing faith, she has some experiences when she's really ill, right? But she's not someone who is in like hocus pocus stuff, right? And none of our characters really are. Jamie's much more superstitious than she is.
Well,
right?
She's
our Highland people are. They're people of their time. So my point is, well, I'm not saying man is the only one who has some abilities. What I'm saying is not only is this the first time we get words or description in man, because she's so young. She's three. She hasn't been able to say much till now. This is the first time we get her own words about her own sensitivities, number one. Number two, again, I'd go so far as to say, okay, maybe not the first time we get words about any traveler's sensitivities, because Claire does speak to those in the know. She's spoken with her daughter, right? She and Claire and Roger and Bree have spoken, and Jamie, and I guess Ian, but especially the four, have spoken back in the 18th century before they left. They spoke, you know, numerous times about how to travel and did it require blood and Galus Duncan. So they talk about the potential how, because they're still working it out, right? No one knows exactly. They're still working it out and hypothesizing, theorizing, philosophizing. So they're still more asking more questions than stating a thing. But Claire has told people, when I did this thing, I saw a blue light. Or when I experienced this, there was this blue. I mean, yeah, absolutely. That's related to her power or her ability, however you want to put it. But we don't have any Claire's, whatever Claire's gifts are, they're not Mandy's, right? They're not the same. They're different. And we learn, not in this chapter and not in this episode, but in the next episode, we learn more about gems. And gems are very similar to Mandy's. We learn more detail about them in the future. But anyway, for right now, that's as far as we'll go. My point is, even though, yes, we know of Claire's gifts, and yes, they're not like Mandy's. They're completely different. At least at this point, right? We don't know if Mandy will.
They're clearly recessive things. They're recessive things that were in both Roger and they all have that oogie boogie about them. Theirs genetically fell differently or hit different.
All I'm trying to say is, number one, it's exciting that she's at least old enough now to describe something. And unfortunately, given terrifying for her, well, for the whole family, unfortunately, it's under horrifying, terrifying conditions, of course. But that's what, like, that's the drama or the immediacy or the terror that caused her to say the thing she's saying, because it's not a feeling that makes her say it. It's a lack of feeling, which tells them now it's not her norm, right? But they don't know this right now. All they're seeing her, because all I've shared right now thus far is that she's pointing to her chest and she says, "Not here with me." And she still will not be soothed. And she's yelling, "Mama, Jemmy's gone." Now, Mandy becomes more and more frustrated that her parents don't understand her and aren't taking it as seriously as she is.
Exactly. Exactly. She doesn't have the vocabulary to get all of the information across, and they're not really listening to her. Yeah.
All she can do is raise her voice and cry. Exactly. And maybe like hit them, maybe.
Well, it doesn't help that he was already staying at a friend's house. So they're like, yeah, he's not here. He's at his friend's house tonight.
So, of course, they're not going to take it as seriously as she is, because they're like, yeah, we know, honey. But she's hitting herself. She's touching her chest. Quote, "He took him. He took him." They look at Buck, and no, Buck doesn't know anything. And then Roger takes Mandy, and Bree goes downstairs to use the phone. She calls the mother of the child that Jem's staying with. Meanwhile, Roger asks Mandy, did you have a bad dream? And she says, yes. And she goes, quote, was big walks. They screamed at me, unquote. Now this mother effing gets Roger's attention. He only thinks. Well, it does, but not for the reason it should, because of course he can't imagine what she's thinking, right? He thinks, oh my gosh, she had a bad dream about their trip through the stones. So he's not putting it together, but that's all he has to go by, right? And Buck is affected by all of this too. They ask her what happened to the dream, and she goes, it's not her. It's Jem. Quote, the man took him and the walks ate him, unquote. And now she is sobbing. And Roger asks, who? What man? Who is the man?
It'd be so much more convenient if she could pronounce her R's.
It makes it more effective, I think. And Roger said, who is the man? And she says, Bobby's daddy.
Ruh-roh.
And of course, we've never met Bobby's daddy, but it's the dude who took Jem to go stay with Bobby. So, of course, she puts it together and thinks Bobby's daddy. So we know who that be. Bree, right then, comes running up back upstairs, like white-faced. Quote, he's gone. Martina says he's not with Bobby. She didn't expect him tonight at all. I made her go outside and look. Rob lives three houses down. She says his truck is gone.
Dead bitch.
Next scene. Roger and Buck are hurling toward Crane Dunn in his wee car, fighting on the way. Buck asks Roger, how do you guys TT? And Roger's like, this is not the time. Right. This is not the time to talk about the hows and the whats and the whats. But they're having strong words. They're both freaking out, but especially Roger.
I'd have been like, bro, I wrote a workbook for you. You can read it when we get to my house. This is not the time.
Ha ha. Oh, my gosh. And he's like, what do you know about it? What's going on? And it turns out not only was someone accidentally reading this stuff, Buck also turns out he was reading all of Roger's writings. And Roger's like, you read the stuff? And he's like, yeah. Of course I did. And so who basically, my question to you is, Summer, who wasn't reading Roger's stuff?
Like me.
I mean, you and me.
I mind my business.
That is true. Buck asks, why would this man have taken Jem? Like, what's going on? And he has absolutely no clue. He does not understand. Buck is stuck, though, on the point Roger made about in the notebook about blood being a possible need. Possibly being needed for some travel. And Roger says he doesn't know. And then Buck's like, then why did you write it with a question mark? And Roger replies, look, what do you mean? And this is where he finds out. You read my notebook too?
Right.
Excuse my language. And I might bleep this, I might not. You read my notebook too, you Sorry, it's a Glaswegian funny. Thing.
I mean, he's from Inverness,
it
makes me think of Scottish people.
It's a Scottish thing. But yes, and that the reason I included that is because it just made me laugh. It just made me laugh. Of course he did, as I said. Anything. He's like, I read anything in your study that I could find. And Roger says, if Buck had taken Jem, is that right, Ginger? Oh, okay. He says, if Buck had taken Jem, he would have killed him, meaning Roger would have killed Buck. But he'd at least understand why Buck might take Jem, right? Meaning, not for the blood part, but like, take someone who knows how to get back or whatever. But this mother father, what the heck? And so Buck is helping now, finally, after he ends his tiff with him, insisting on all these details. Buck is helping Roger think a little more calmly. He's like, okay, tell me about the man. Is he like us? Can he travel? And Roger says, I don't know. And then Roger tells Buck that Cameron.
I'd have been like, how the F should he know?
He's actually met and talked with Rob Cameron a lot more. Buck's never met him some. So Buck is just trying to say,
no, I know, but how would Roger know? If he's a traveler or not. That's not a normal conversation piece.
Oh, that. No, but it's not. That's one question he asks. But he says, tell me about him. So it's not just one question. But yeah, he has no clue if he's a traveler or not. And then Roger tells Buck that Cameron also read the notebook. It was by accident. And it was unfortunately Robert. Now I'm making up names. Roger's fault, right? Because Roger had brought the music with him to that Gaelic. Not music. Maybe it was music. It was either music or some Gaelic handouts. But he had brought some materials with him to the Gaelic class he gave to the community. And among the papers was the notebook. Cameron did not steal it from him. Or he may have taken it from there. That we know of. But at least at this point, Roger believes that he accidentally brought it to that Gaelic class. And once he saw it and read it, that Rob, you know, he walked up and said, you know, I think this was in your papers on accident. I don't think you meant to bring it here, but it's interesting. And he hands it back to him. And this makes me think we don't have, I mean, we could talk about it real quick. It doesn't really matter at this point. But now I'm wondering, did he truly make an error and have the notebook around among his stuff? It's very possible, I think, because it all came from his office.
Or is that him returning it after stealing it?
Correct. That's what I'm wondering. Because he can use it's a perfect cover for that if he is. But Roger had lied, of course, to Rob and said, "Oh, it's just something I'm written. It's just fiction. I'm working on a story. It's something I wrote for fun." Then Buck and Roger. Mm-hmm. Close enough. I wonder if Diana did that on purpose. I'm guessing not. Okay, they arrive at the stones and it's empty, save for Rob's blue truck. That tells them all they need to know, right? That Rob had come out here with Jem and had disappeared. That's all they can see. That's the proof they have in front of their eyes. That's the only, on the surface at least, in the hysteria, in the fright, in the concern, in the panic, that is the most, maybe not logical. Yeah, I think that is the most logical connection because you're worried, right? So that's what they see and that's what they think. And that's what they think. Okay. They go up the hill. They're like, okay, we have to at least go up there now to make sure like they're not dead somewhere. So they walk up the hill and they hear them. They're very loud. It was empty though, except for the stones. And Roger gets a little close and he passes out. When he comes to, it's closer to, now Buck got sick too, but he did not, and he may have passed out, but he didn't get it as badly as Roger. What he had done is he had drug Roger back free of the stones, saved him from going through and maybe from death. Right. But they both passed out. And now it's when they come to, it's closer to dawn. And now after all of that, they believe they know what their next step has to be. And they have to go home and make real plans.
And then they got to kill Cameron. That would be on my list. Anyway, that was chapter 85. Moving right along to chapter 86, entitled Valley Forge.
William is about to go beg the services of Denny, the surgeon, for his cousin. He says he needs to wear his uniform so that everything was official. He was going to travel under a flag of truce to get into the American camp. Blah, blah, blah. Lord John is, of course, and understandably worried. And he insists that William take a servant with him to help handle all of his gear and food and all of that. So we're introduced, if not in person, there's a little bit of description of him, not a whole bunch. But this is the first time we get the name of this dude named Colenso Baragwanath. And I think that is the best name Diana has ever written. Can you think of a better name?
What was the dude on the island with the coconut?
That I don't know, but I know you hated Guinea
Dick. Guinea Dick. That's a terrible name.
Colenso Baragwanath is better than Guinea
Well,
Dick.
Well, he sounds like some kind of...
The dude? Was it on... Not Virginia.
Piranha fish. I'm saying his name sounds like he's some sort of piranha fish.
Oh, Colenso Baragwanath?
Yeah, I think he like lives in the water and
what
eats
were
things.
You thinking of?
Whereas...
Was it in the Caribbean?
I remember what the... Didn't he have a... Yeah. She was stuck on the island with the guy, the coconut, and the woman who hated her.
The father?
Mamacita. Yeah. They were kind of crazy.
Oh, no, they were crazy. I'm saying in the name. They had normal names, though, except for the Ermenhilda, Gilda, whatever. That's still Spanish. It's not... may not sound, quote-unquote... it's not English, certainly, or American. But the names didn't sound... may have sounded different to us, but they didn't sound like this different and this amazing.
Well, they're definitely more creative than some real people that
oh
I know.
Oh my goodness.
In real life. These names are like Rob Roberts.
I mean, if you had to choose between Rob Roberts and Colenso Baragwanath, you go with Colenso Baragwanath.
Or Will Williams.
That's a bit much. Summer. How about Summer Summers? Oh my God. Saying, someone could actually be named people. Summer Summers.
You know what? Okay, when I was 15, Wait, when I was 15, I went into, we were on Venice Beach.
Was I there?
On a choir tour.
Oh.
Yeah. But you weren't with me. And somehow me and my friend walked in and they let us watch this guy getting tattooed on Venice Beach. And we were like talking to him about tattoos and stuff. We were all just being like, you know, 15, 16 year olds. And we were exchanging names. And when I said my name was Summer, he was like, we should never get married. And I was like, what are you talking about?
That's quite forward.
I don't know this guy at all. And then he pulls out his license and hands it to me. And his name is Gary Summers.
Funny.
And I was like, you're right. I could not go the rest of my life being Summer.
You can always keep your name, but I totally get
it. But that always
it.
Sounds like a thing, like an action. Summer Summers. I'm summering.
Huh. So this Colenso Baraguana, that was a good story. Colenso Baraguana will serve as his valet, servant, etc. Lord John sends him with food, not just to keep him fed, but like an overabundance to help, if need be, to help sway the commander of the American army camp, just in case their food conditions aren't great. And spoiler alert, they're not. And he goes with a white flag of truce, and he went unarmed. Thankfully, he gets through. And I thought this was a very interesting point that Diana made. He didn't just say he got through and went to ask. Diana makes the point that William got through, but it wasn't getting through and then being told that, yes, you can have our surgeon. He got through and got permission to go ask the surgeon if the surgeon would go come with him. And he's like, through William's thoughts, Diana writes, he's like, that's an interesting difference between the American army and the British army. And so this is something that in the British army, it would have been like, if you need this, then if it's needed and we can spare him, then I can command you to go and you will go. Whereas in the American army, maybe it's being a surgeon. I don't know, maybe a certain higher up, maybe like this, I'm making up words. I'm not making up scuttlebutt. That's an actual thing or a term, but I'm making up words. Like I don't know what I'm making up facts. Basically. I don't know. I know there are still ranks in the American army at this time, but I don't know at which level do you earn enough autonomy to be able to answer the question for yourself? I don't know, because I know in today's military, you still get orders. So, and I know this was not a military giving. I mean, it could have been a military giving its own members an order, but it's just really interesting that Diana made that difference out, because I have read this book and listened to it umpteen times. That never stayed with me. Did you realize that she was trying to point that difference out?
No, I was listening for
content. Oh, no, me too. But that stood out to me. So he finds Denny and, of course, Rachel. And Rachel sees him first, and she's shocked. She runs up to him and hugs him. And he hadn't expected to see her, let alone a hug. And he really enjoys it. Quote, she smelled of herself and of smoke, and it made his blood run faster. Unquote.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
So William has the hots for Rachel, in case you didn't know.
Dude, there's a whole comedy of errors about to go down.
Oh, you wait. I wrote a certain word, which should be coming up probably in the next chapter.
I'm just saying.
A lot.
It's all grande.
I wrote that word too. There's a lot coming up over the next, if you guys stick with us throughout this
video.
There's
a lot.
It's a long tour here, but it's a lot of words and a lot of chapters.
Grandes.
The number of grandes, like if we had a tally, we should probably have a grande tally. Like, we don't have time for that right now, unless you want to do it. I don't have time for that, but if you want to do it, I'd love it. Or if someone wants to do it and tell us. Anywhoozle. William tells them that he's come to ask Denny for a favor. He does, and Denny says, absolutely. And Rachel says, I'll come with him, regardless of what he says, meaning Denny. And she's like, yeah, you can't keep me here. My whole reason for being here is to help you and, like, whatever, all that. And they have to bring Rollo because she is the caretaker of Rollo right now. And William's all, what the hell? Where's Ian? Why do you have his dog? And she's like, oh, he's in Scotland.
Exactly.
He's in Scotland. He's running an urgent errand with his uncle, Jamie Fraser. You know him?
Can you imagine anyone saying I'm running an urgent errand to Scotland?
Well, today it'd be like, oh my gosh, you've got some money or it's a huge emergency. Back in that day, good Lord. They don't have airplanes.
Like urgent error then was like, it'll take me a month or two to get there, but I'm on my way. Ha! Urgent now is like, find a plane, go on it now.
I'll see you tonight or tomorrow.
Right.
He's running an errand for his uncle, Jamie Fraser. Do you know him? And he's like, ish. I met him once many years ago when I was younger. And what about the dog? What happened? What's going on? And he's like, well, she says he was injured before he left. And because he was injured, he couldn't take him with him.
Just keep an eye out for the putty tat. Couscous, where are you? Kiva, you know I don't trust you. Where are you?
Okay, well, as long as she's not there, I'm not going to complain. Back in Philadelphia, Lord John is helping in his own way to get ready for Henry's surgery. They've got Denny. Denny's there. He's going to do the surgery. Lord John he puts a leather strap in between Henry's teeth. And they were able to give him laudanum, but he's only half out of it. So he's still going to feel some things. But it's time for the surgery. Wahoo. So while Denny refused further help of the dowser, because Lord John's like, hey, I had this guy tell me this thing and they only found one of the bullets, but, you know, I can bring him back. And he's like, yeah, thank you. No, that's what's the word? Divination. And it's against my belief in this God. But he does say, okay, if you already have information from him, let's mark the spot, right? Because, I mean, at least if he found something and you can fail it, I'm not going to put that potential knowledge to waste. So Lord John tells him where, and he marks it and he gets ready. And Denny was quick. In barely 15 minutes, he was done. And after he's done, this is the whole surgery, because he goes into the mark, finds the thing, takes it out, but he still knows there's one in there, right? So it's not done. It's just what he can do right now. Afterwards, Denny is preparing a poultice and Gray's all, the fuck is that? And, oh, he's like, oh, it's just something recommended to me by a colleague, Mrs. Fraser. Lord John's like, no way. Not James Fraser's wife. And he's like, yes way. Where did you meet him? Oh, we met Fort Ticonderoga. He mimics what Rachel had said. He tells, now is delivering the same information to Lord John. The Frasers are in Scotland on an errand or something. Denny says, okay, all done. But someone has to stay with him for the next day or so. He can't be alone. Make sure, you know, everything stays. He sleeps well. He doesn't get a fever and all that. They ask William if there's somewhere they can stay, meaning Denny and Rachel. And he's like, I've already taken care for it. I found you an inn. And they're also, so Denny and Rachel are staying in town to provide aftercare. But for the overnights and everything, they need to get sleep. So William takes them or shows them to their inn. As I said, there's still a bullet left in Henry. So it's around Christmas time. And Quakers do not observe Christmas. But they won't say no to a Christmas dinner because you got to have dinner. If it happens to be on the 25th and people call it Christmas dinner, fine, I'll have it. It's still my dinner. Over dinner, they talk about stuff. And Rachel asks him if he thinks William knows that he bears a striking resemblance to one James Fraser. And then he says, I'm sure it's not our business. And she goes, she just says she was surprised to learn that William was such a high-ranking officer and a lord. Because for him to like look like so much like Jamie and to be a lord, like how did that happen? Was the Fraser sperm so powerful that it just got into every single lady's nook and cranny?
I mean, there aren't that many.
Well, okay, that he's been with, no, but I'm trying to imply.
It's just the one.
Well, two. He knocked up two women.
Just the one illegitimate one.
Oh, yeah.
who's a lord or a lady.
A lady, yeah.
Because, well, Brianna's not
no,
a lady.
Of course not.
I mean, she's a female.
Brianna.
But she's
you
not...
mean Claire.
Correct. No, I'm not talking about Claire. I'm talking about Brianna.
But the lady was Geneva. So Geneva's equivalent would be Claire.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is the equivalent.
Of William.
I'm equalizing William.
I did not
and
hear that. I heard not, you didn't say her name, but I thought you meant as far as the knocking up part. That was of Geneva. Okay, got it. So to things of Ian, Denny thinks it's fruitless given his background. He's like, sis, and it makes me laugh when he calls her sissy because no, I just cannot do. I guess some people do it seriously, but like whenever Summer and I do that, it is completely. First of all, we don't do that.
It grates. I hate
what?
It. It's great.
Just,
I hate
it's
it.
It's weird.
And then when you say it, I want nothing to do with whatever you're
well,
saying.
First of all, I never say it to you. I never say it. I'll call you Schwester, but I never say sissy. Ew, I can't even say
you,
that.
You used to say sissy. You have said sissy. You have said sissy.
In my life, yes. But I do not come to you trying to get a favor and say sissy. That's dumb. I don't like it
that
either.
Doesn't end well.
So he's like, he's a man of blood. Like, look at his background. Like, you having feelings for this dude. There's not a future there, girlfriend. Or a sissy friend. He's a man of blood. And she asks, what would you have me do? Marry William?
Exactly.
I'm like, that's not quite the answer or the question he was expecting. Mm-hmm. He's like, what? Where did William have to do with this? Do you feel for William anything? She's like, well, I feel a friendship for him and gratitude. And Denny says, quote, so do I. Yet the thought of marrying him had not crossed my mind. So gratitude is typically not a reason or not enough of a reason to marry someone. Take them off the market.
I mean, in that time it was.
I mean.
Gratitude.
It might need to be, yes. Just then, a fur-clad woman is seen entering the inn and she comes up to them, to their room. It's Dorothea. Dorothea and Denny embrace passionately.
Now.
And yes.
Before they say her name.
It's.
Did you know it was Dottie?
I knew it was her before they said her name because she was in furs and hugged Denny. That was the only person it could be. I mean, it could be technically anybody, but only person it was likely be to hunt them out at an inn and come up to their room. It was not going to be anybody else. They embrace passionately. And yes, it's William's cousin, Dorothea. This is where this is the first time I used this term for these two episodes, actually. This crowd, and I don't mean just the people in this room right now, I mean, the crowd, pretty much everybody we come across over the next two episodes. So it's tons of chapters, right? This crowd, Summer, is all kinds of incestuous.
Oh, yes.
Everyone knows everybody or is related to everybody else or has slept with somebody else that somebody else knows. Oh, my gosh. She's Henry's sister as well.
Well, and then but you have this and then you no longer feel bad for William.
Oh, because of incest? I'm lost.
No, because. Well, you start to feel bad for William. I mean, for Dottie, because he's having feelings for Rachel. And then she shows up and has feelings for the third person. So it's kind of canceled out the sadness I felt on either of their part by not feeling the same way anymore.
The problem is it's not equal. And I'm not saying you're saying it's equal, but to me, it doesn't affect me like equal out any or cancel out anything because Denny likes no one but Dorothea. Dorothea likes no one but Denny. Willie likes someone who doesn't like him. And Rachel and Ian both like someone who loves or likes them back. So there's no equivalent between Dorothea and Denny and.
Yeah.
Well, there is. Dorothea and Denny and Ian and Rachel. Yes. But as far as William is involved, it's unfortunate. It makes it sadder. But,
well, I'm just remembering in a future chapter how he was all gaga for Dottie. And so he was all about that. And then all of a sudden he sees Rachel. Yeah.
What, William? William, it was a ruse to get Dottie. It was it's not in a future chapter. It was a past chapter. When they were in England, London, and Dorothea was trying to do, she had a pact with William. It's a way for her to get to America to be with Denny. So they had to have this ruse. So the ruse was, I'm in love with William. I need to be with him.
I didn't pick up on the ruse part of it. I believed them.
Oh,
I believed them both.
Yeah, it was there. Oh, no. There was a whole conversation with Lord John. Lord John's like,
I know he was surprised.
What?
I know.
And Lord John didn't even believe her. I mean, at first he's like, oh, maybe there is something there. And he's like, yeah, no. Dorothea tells him, interesting, we did not know this either. Dorothea tells him, them, that she'd hidden, she was there the whole time during the surgery that they were present at. She had hidden in the kitchen the whole time when they, as soon as she knew they were coming, she'd hidden because she didn't want, she wanted to see Danny, but she didn't want to throw him off kilter just before he performed this potentially life-saving surgery on her brother, which was very smart of her. And then, like I said, she came in, she'd hugged him, but she was covered in furs. After she says those words, she drops fur and she's basically wearing a sack. And she tells Denny, I will be a Quaker and I will be with you. And he's like, and are you sure? And she starts to, what?
We dress plain, but we don't have to dress ugly.
You don't have to. Yeah. She spouts off the major tenets of Quakerology. And Denny asks her, quote, did thee make that garment? And she goes, yes, what's wrong? And he's like, oh, nothing. And Rachel says, quote, friends are allowed to wear clothes that fit. Thee need not purposefully uglify thyself. Unquote. That was great.
She's like, I had to overcome my rare beauty with something. So I chose this ugly dress that I made.
No, she just thought that she had to play down all. She thought in playing down eccentricities and vanities, she couldn't show her shape at all. And they're like, oh, girl, you can actually wear something that fits. But Dorothea, Denny says, cannot stay there. She knows, like, they're not married. She knows, like, she knows she can't stay. She's like, I know, but I had to sneak out to see you. They offer her some wine. And Denny's still not convinced that she knows what she's getting into. He wants, I mean, he absolutely loves her. But he's like, girl, I can't, like, I can't. This is a lot. I don't think you've taken time. Assuming it is possible to become a friend, mostly concerning your family, if not her. Is this even going to work?
It's probably sexually transmitted.
She retorts that they're Quakerism?
Yeah. So he just has to marry her.
She retorts that there is nothing in the principles of the faith that require her to ask her father's permission to marry. And how does she know this? She's like, oh, I met a Quaker in London named Priscilla Unwin. And I did not look her up, but I'm guessing that this is a real person. Because Diana loves to do this, right? Dorothea says she won't be going back home to London. She'd already crossed an ocean to be with him. Therefore, nothing would stop her from following him into war. She's like, you may not want me here, and I will not stay here and, like, selling myself again, in front of God and the people. I will go home and back to my family tonight because of propriety. But once you leave Philadelphia, I'm following your ass. He argues that Rachel, she's like, if your sister can be with you, I can be with you. And she's like, he says, Rachel is with me because she's my responsibility and she's got nowhere else to go. Rachel didn't like that last part. No. She's like, you told me if I didn't want to go with you, you'd find me a place of safety with friends if I wanted. So, dude, do not tell me I had nowhere to go. This was my freaking choice.
Mm. And she's like, and I have friends. It's not like I have nowhere to go. Stop making me sound like such a loser.
Dorothea suggests, okay, since this is all a tittle right now, why don't we hold a meeting and ask the Lord to guide us? And neither of them, meaning, of course, Danny, because Rachel's just going along. Danny's like, oh, okay, how can I say no to that? To say no to that is like denying the Lord. So no, of course not. She's like, okay, fine, let's do that. They sit, the Lord talks to them, or not, whatever happens in their head happens, and Rollo comes up to Rachel during the meeting, she's reminded at this point more of Ian, and she thinks, regarding Ian, quote, I am a good judge of character, and I know what he is, and I know him for what he might be, too, unquote. And that's, in her own mind, she has this long back and forth conversation with when Denny was saying, you know, things like, you know what he's like. And or they had this conversation before and he had said, oh, you know, and his dog. And he's like, the dog likes not everybody. The dog likes a lot of people, though. I don't think a dog is a great
this one
character.
Is.
And she's like, well, maybe, but I am. Well, no, her person is her human. She as a human is. And she knows and she does believe that. It's a plus that Rollo likes her, but she trusts in her ability of knowing character and not just how he is, but what he can be, what his potential is. Denny, surprisingly, at least to me, is the one to break the silence. And what does he say? Quote, I love thee, Dorothea. Will thee marry me? Unquote.
He's like,
well, then.
You're so close. All I have to do is say the words and I can have you. I'm going to keep you. He loves her.
Moving right along to chapter 87, entitled Severance and Reunion.
April 20th, 1778. Claire and Ian have shipped it to America. Thankfully, the trip was dull. Now, while Claire was sad to not be able to be there for Jamie and Jenny when Ian passed, she was more sad, of course, for young Ian, who had missed his father's last days. They console each other that Ian, Sr., had wanted them both to go, Claire to help his grandchildren, and Ian to get, potentially, love of his life. And he understood why they had to go too. Ian wishes his father could have met Rachel. He realizes in his chat with Claire that while he told his dad about Rachel, which, before he left, and there really wasn't time because they left in a hurry when it was time to go, he'd not told Rachel about his dad. And there really wasn't much to tell her, I guess at that time. They hadn't even really,
because they
hadn't
barely know
much.
Each other.
They hadn't talked much, and then they'd kissed, and then he had to peace out. Like, that's literally how it happened. But he says he is sure that there's something between them. It's not, and it is reciprocated. It is 100% not one-sided. They arrive in Philadelphia. Now, Claire, this makes me laugh. I don't know why, and I hope, I don't know why it makes me laugh. I found Philadelphia fine, especially the old, I don't know if it's all considered, it's probably all considered old, but especially the old town, wherever the most historical places are that the ones we were able to see during our time there, I think it was 2017 or 18. I forget what year we were there. Anyway, Claire says she hadn't liked it much in the 20th century, and it wasn't much better now in the 18th, even before it kind of grew up, right? Or shot up. She'd had a story about, so they arrive, right? And they have to make their way into Philadelphia. They agree that Ian won't go into town. He might get into trouble easily. He'll be questioned too much. So she, even though she's much less likely to be questioned, she still has a story ready, or she has something to be able to protect her. And her story is she's coming into town from the country to help her daughter in the city, who's about to give birth. And she does this to hopefully get by the army patrols. Quote, "The soldiers glanced briefly into the large basket of food I had on my lap, but didn't even look at my face before waving the wagon on. Respectability had its uses. I wondered idly how many spy masters had thought of using elderly ladies. You didn't hear about old women as spies, but then again, that might merely indicate how good they were at it." Unquote.
She's not elderly.
Right? In this time, she might be.
I'm just like, come
on.
In
that time, she might be, I mean.
But she doesn't look elderly.
Correct. For her, no.
Because every time they say that she sees herself in the mirror, she's like, I've held myself together quite well.
She's like, I look pretty good, bish.
I look like I've walked into teenagers who look like they're on death's doorstep next to me.
The first stop, Fergus's print shop. It was a red brick building. Now, she had not written ahead telling them she was coming.
Surprise!
She was in too much. Exactly. Surprise! She opens the door and it's Marsley, who immediately sees her and runs to her and begins to sob. "Where's Fergus?" she asks. She finds out he's in hiding because of a wee pamphlet that he's helping circulate.
Right,
of
but course. She said he's gone. And he was like, left? He left you?
Yeah, he left you? And she sees that Marsley appears to be pregnant again, but Marsley's like, oh, no. And she kind of laughs and she pulls aside her apron. It's a leather sack that she keeps on her, or guessing at all times, in case they need to escape, in case the print shop is set ablaze. She goes out to call Henri Christian, and Claire takes note of Marsley's quote, of her words that she had said, in case they fire the house. And she's like, who would do this? Would it be the Brits? I guess it's not that hard to conceive of, but she's thinking of like, oh my gosh, this is not just Christian's in danger, but the whole freaking family could be in danger if she's walking around with this around her all day, every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, they must be. That's a lot of extra weight to carry willingly.
Too even when you're getting sleep, she's not getting sleep. It's even worse. So Henri Christian comes in and he wants to show her a trick. And apparently, I guess it's Germain, he's been learning some pickpocketing, and which everyone freaks out about. And Claire looks at his throat and she's like, yes, I can help. I will be able to do this. And Marshallee cries again in relief and in weariness. And Claire says, quote, it's all right now. I'm here. You can sleep, unquote. The latter, Claire, begins to prep for, this is the next scene, begins to prep for, prep. She preps.
Are you Australian?
She prep, no, that, yeah, maybe so. I don't even know.
Or South African?
What. Whatever comes prep. Out, comes out.
Okay.
She preps, I guess so. She preps for the first surgery, which is Henri Christian. We learn now, I said it earlier, but it happens right now in the chapter. We learn now that Ian had not come into town with her. It was dangerous for men his age, even men with tattoos on their faces and mohawks, I guess. People who look and spoke like mohawks. He'd likely be arrested as a very suspicious person. And he wanted to look for Rachel. He'd said that he'd start with the army. So he'd walk around or find out where the nearest American troops were and then ask about Denny, the army surgeon, where was he here? Was he there? And then she would, once he found out where he was headed to, he would send word to Claire at the print shop to let them know where he was bound once he found anything out. So as for Henri Christian's surgery, the location was a very well-lit place. She needed a well-lit place. And she's like, I know typically in this time, a lot of rich people have like open, bright rooms, a lot of sunlight, and they can afford candles and all of this. So she's thinking like, where could we go? Where could it be? But first she has to get her instruments made. She had set some penicillin bowls to brew out as soon as she'd gotten there, but there's no guarantee that they'd be ready, number one, or number two would be the right strain, let alone strong enough to help.
No, we're
so
back
it's all
to that
out
again.
Of whim. Yeah, I know. That she never ends that. She also looks for the ingredients to make ether. And she goes to the apothecary shop and they didn't have any vitriol. And the guy tells her, yeah, we got to ship that stuff in from England. And our supply was all bought up recently by an English lord. Excuse me, what?
An English lord, you say?
And she's like, it can't be Lord John.
Of course it is,
apparently, Grande. Apparently, Claire doesn't yet know her Truman Show is written by Diana Gabaldon.
Right.
Indeed.
Grande.
It was Grande. And it was a Grande and it was Grande. He had it delivered to his house on Chestnut Street. Diggity damn. She finds her way to Chestnut Street. She goes in. She's greeted by Dorothea, whom she meets for the first time. But how? How is this possible? She finds out William is paroled in Philadelphia and he'd come to this house to see his father and her brother who was ill. Then out comes Lord John.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high fidelity podcasting.
Lord John, Jamie's
check out
me.
Zencastr and use coupon code
Gray
Outlander
by chance,
20
she'd come Outlander to give 20 from Jamie.
For 20%
she's
off
like,
3 months
or
20% off
either.
A year. Connect with us.
I came to ask you
visit
for a
our
favor,
website
my darling.
At outlanderpod.com.
Vitriol, my dude.
Find us on Facebook.
And he's like, yep.
Facebook.com/outlanderpod.
So they make a deal
for you to join our
he
Facebook
would get
community.
It, he would give it over.
Outlanderpod.com.
I mean, he ends up getting it, but we're going to wait on that.
Follow us on Twitter
would
and Instagram.
Give it over. Any and all of the vitriol.
He's going to give it up.
I mean, the vitriol, yes. And he'd also purchase any other supplies she needed if she'd perform a surgery as well on Henry. And she's like, well, duh. I get my jollies off of that. So, and I get to help somebody. So, yeah.
Who do you think you're talking to? I'm tired of pulling teeth.
Exactly.
Give me something
really
exciting.
I haven't done that since I was in New Bern, and I don't want
to really
do that again because that was disgusting.
I really need to put my hands in somebody's guts. Can you please set
that
up?
This is what pays me in, not money, but like in jollies. It gives me the jollies. And he tells her, so he's had several surgeries. And Dr. Hunter did the last one. And she's like, wait, excuse me, what? And he's like, yeah, that Denzel Hunter. And she happens to know him too.
Of course
seriously, Summer. Grande. Dear listener, This whole shebingadangdabop.
There's only 25 people in Philadelphia. Of course that's they all true. Know each other.
Then down comes Rachel from upstairs, and she and Claire hug it out. Yo, she asks, where's Ian? Claire's all, he's actually out looking for you.
So stay put.
Lord John leaves them to chat about Ian. He's like, I think because of who I am and who my family is and who you are and who Ian is, I best not hear
any
about
of this.
Where Ian might be. It is safer to keep me out of this. So I will go, I'll go look at Henry. I'll go not look at him. I'll go look at him. I'll go spend some time with Henry and make sure he's okay. And they do their thing. After they're done, she'll go upstairs and examine Henry for the first time.
And that was chapter 87. That will wrap up our read along for this episode. We will be coming back next episode to do a lot of chapters, but they're all semi-short.
To do 50 more chapters.
50 more pages, maybe. We're going to do 88, entitled Rather Messy. 89, Ink-Stained Wretch. 90, Armed with Diamonds and with Steel. 91, Footsteps. 92, Independence Day. Trois. Oh, you're right. Sorry. I don't know French. 93, entitled A Series of Short, Sharp Shocks. And that 100% is giving me HMS Pinafore feels. 94, The Paths of Death. 95, Numbness. And that will end. 96 and Firefly.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Linda Z. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, we just got another co-producer yesterday or today. Summer. Oh my gosh. Visit us at Visit us at outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you just can't get enough of talk about Outlander and need more people to talk to, please join us in our group at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you are just hankering for some Outlander Pod branded merch, please visit our store at www.outlanderpod.com/shop. And you might find a shirt on there that explains to you what a grunge is if it's a brand new word to you.
Did we put it back up there?
It was up there. I don't know. You took it down.
Oh, I thought it was there just for a limited thing.
You made it up. You added it back.
We'll have to check. If it's not there, it will be there by the end of the year. It'll be there before the end of the year. But I'm just saying we can't promise a date or time. But we will absolutely get it back up there because, heck, I know Summer has it. I don't have one. I'd like one. Oh, I thought you had one.
No.
You and I both need one.
No,
then.
My car has one.
No, but it doesn't have a definition.
No, it doesn't have a shirt, but it's got the name on it. That's the only thing I have that's got Grange written on it.
If you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, please do. It is also free. It's called the Outlander Pod Gazette, by the way. You can find out more at outlanderpod.com/newsletter. And thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next rather filled episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.